On the air everywhere, this is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Is that a Canadian? Are you Canadian?
Whatever.
I guess not.
Hey, welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night.
I got that wrong.
Yeah, it's January something. I don't know. It's Thursday, January something. Pleasure this is for you. This must be your lucky day. Welcome to the show. My name is Stephanie Zimblis Jr. And man, it's good to be alive. Much better than the other possibility of not being alive. It's going to be a beautiful day out today, which is kind of absurd because I don't know where you live. Could be raining, could be snowing, could be a tornado. I don't really know. I'm just talking pretty much off my face. Hey, let's get right into the show because kids are waiting at the school bus stop today.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today?
You know, I talked about this before, and I don't quite understand certain things. And one thing that I don't understand is UPS uniforms. And here's the problem with that. I have discussed this before, but it eats away at me. It's like viruses and diseases just eating away at my soul because I don't understand it. I don't understand why here's like a gigantic company, United Parcel Service, with these trucks all over the place, all over the world. And yet, for a color scheme of uniform and truck, they have decided to go with the color of a package. And a package is usually a brown. I describe the brown, and excuse me for my language, but I really do need this as a descriptive part of this segment. It's a shit brown. It's the kind of brown that shit is made out of. If you're healthy, by the way. If you're not healthy, that brown can vary greatly. But for good healthy shit, it's that color. And I'm just trying to picture these high-intensity executives with briefcases and pinstripe suits sitting in the UPS conference room, which is probably on the 200th floor in Qatar somewhere. And they say, let's come up with a color scheme for our company. Federal Express has purple. We like the purple and orange. That's very nice, but we can't do that because Federal Express has it. Okay. How about like a red and gold kind of thing? Because that's very, very classy. You know, red and gold is not bad. But what I'm thinking of is more of a shit brown. I mean, the color of turds is what I think would be very effective because everybody can relate to it. They see it every day. They produce it themselves. It is a natural color. It's the color of the ground. Mud and stuff can also be that color. So let's try to get our company, our gigantic global company, to remind people of shit and mud. How about that? How about that for a color scheme? Oh, Bob, I like the shit and mud kind of thing. That's brilliant. That is brilliant. Because our company is nothing but shit and mud. So, yeah, go for it, baby. And you're getting a promotion. That is just brilliant. I want people who use our service to think that UPS, that's the color of shit. I relate to that. I want to be it. I want to be that color. I want to be a UPS driver and get up in the morning and put my shit colored clothing on. And I want to wear shorts. And not only do I want to wear shit colored clothing, I want to wear shorts while I'm doing it. That would be wonderful. I don't get it. I totally don't get that color scheme. And for those of you who work for UPS, God love you, man. You move the packages around, stuff like that. You're wonderful. You're close to sainthood by delivering packages and picking them up. I forgot. And picking them up. Oh, I forgot about that part. Yeah, you do that too. But you're wonderful. I mean, it can be snowing, it can be raining, could be molten lava from a volcano, and you guys just are delivering packages left and right with your shit-colored clothing. And so, who am I to? You know? But I'm just saying, I don't understand that. I don't. And there are some female UPS drivers. Not a lot of them. You don't see a lot of female package delivery drivers. You know why? Because females would probably love the job and could do the job as well as a man, because there are weight restrictions on the packages anyway. But women have the ability to say, excuse me, I'm not wearing shit-colored clothing. No way, honey. I have a little more taste than that. True, I need a job, but I ain't wearing that shit. And that's your segment of What Are You Wearing Today?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today? Today?
Got a question for the Oriental cuisines. I don't know what is politically proper to call that anymore. Pacific Rim, Asian. I don't know what to call you. I'm not profiling you. I just don't know what to call you. I mean, all that cuisine is very, it's different, but has a lot in common. So I'm referring to all those cuisines that have that in common, but I don't know politically what's correct to call you. So here's what I don't understand about your cuisine. If it's so good and so tasty and so full of flavor and nutrients, why do you put MSG in everything? Madison Square Garden stuff, monosodium glutamate, I believe it is, which sounds very chemically. When you put it together, it sounds like it's like chemicals, like you're putting a taste together in a lab and feeding it to a rat, and then I'm eating it. So. But you got MSG in all this stuff as a flavor enhancer. And I don't quite understand why you would need to enhance the flavor of your food. Is it awful? Really? I mean, is it so awful that you need to add this gigantic chemical to things? It's like if people sat down and ate your Oriental quote-unquote food, and there was no MSG, would they go, whoa, this is tastes like cardboard. It tastes like a dead horse. Here's some MSG. This is wonderful. Oh, this is now wonderful. I mean, I don't quite get that. Do you ever walk into a Chinese restaurant? It's not the end of the sentence. Just hold on. Do you ever walk into a Chinese restaurant and people are at the counter, Americans are at the counter, and they're going, yeah, give me the poo-poo platter. By the way, nice name for a platter, poo-poo. I'm not being anal today. I'm just telling you what it is, that this platter is named after poo-poo, which is what a lot of people call poo-poop. Whatever, you know, I mean, a poo-poo platter is pretty much what happens after you eat the platter. The platter turns into poo-poo. All right, Ron, clean this up, please. Please, even you're annoying yourself. So you walk into a Chinese restaurant, and there are people there standing at the counter for takeout. People don't like to eat at Chinese restaurants. They like to take it out. I love your food, but I can't eat it in your place. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's a nice restaurant. You got crap hanging from the ceilings and things made of paper and nice little color schemes and stuff, but be damned if I'm going to eat here. You know what I'm saying? Give me your food and I'm getting the hell out of here. I'd rather eat this like in an alleyway somewhere than sit in your restaurant and eat this stuff. So there's a lot of takeout in Chinese restaurants, and it's poo-poo platters. It's the fried chicken thing, which, like, hello, like, really? The egg rolls, the fried wontons, the crab rangoon, which has no rangoon, no crab. It's fried dough and cream cheese is really all it is. Anyway, it's all this crap, you know, this tasty crap, and Americans are lined up to have the tasty deep-fried crap. And then you kind of peer over to one of the tables near the kitchen, and a couple of the Chinese waiters and waitresses are on their break, and they're sitting there. They're not eating that crap. They're eating different stuff. They're having white rice, but they're having noodles in a bowl or vegetables in a bowl, and they have chopsticks, but not to pick things up. They use them to push, a push scoop kind of thing. They raise the bowl to their mouths, and then they funnel it in with those chopsticks like they're gigantic earth movers. And this is the way that they eat, and God love them, because you don't see a lot of fat Chinese people. You don't. They look pretty trim. They look all right, man. So they're doing something right. And you know what they're doing? They're not eating their own Chinese American food. That's what they're not doing. They're not eating that stuff. The stuff that you eat in a Chinese restaurant, they're not eating that. I'm telling you. I'm just saying. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. As I drink some water because I'm very parched today. You don't even care that I'm parched, do you? What do you care? Yeah, I'm parched. But, you know, how often do people come up to me and go, Ron, you look a little parched today. Yeah, like you care. Like you care if I'm parched.
Gentlemen, did you ever notice that it always seems to be the ladies who pamper themselves with a spa day, with the mani-pedi and the facials and the massage? Do you ever think maybe you'd like to have a special day for yourself, but you are afraid it might be a little gay? Well, good news, gentlemen. Now you can have your own special spa day at Ramon Ramirez's Not-So-Gay Salon for Men. Let Ramon Ramirez take the stress off a tough day with a long, deep massage. It's not gay, it's therapeutic. After you relax, Ramon Ramirez will use special oils and lotions and maybe clean up some of your hairier man parts. It's not gay, it's hygienic. A lot of guys are doing it. Then it's time to kick back and let it all hang out in a long steam room session with Ramon Ramirez. It's not gay, much. So gentlemen, why wait? It's time for you to have a great day for yourself at Ramon Ramirez's Not So Gay Salon for Men. Please, no fat guys.
That's my motto. No fat guys. Thank you. Some people are genetically fat, and that's a problem. No matter what they do, no matter how they eat, no matter how much they exercise, they still are fat, and I feel bad for that. There are certain operations, but no one wants to have an operation to that extent. But when it involves your health, I guess you have to do what you have to do. And now I'm wondering why I'm even talking about this. This is day number 22, I believe. Day number 22, I joined the Purple Pill Gymnasium there, that Planet whatever, Planet X fitness thing. The purple place with the color scheme of Barney, the purple dinosaur. And I, 22 days, I joined up. I got on a treadmill for about 23 minutes, got off the treadmill, got in my car, drove away, had a sandwich, have not been back since day number 22, ladies and gentlemen. I keep saying to myself, I'll just exercise at home because it's cold outside. Why would I get into my sleazy little gym pants that probably have a hole in the crotch that I can't even see? Why don't I just do something in my home? So I have all this gym equipment that I've since sold or given away. I used to have a treadmill, an exercise bike, one of those ski things where it's like you're skiing or something, you know, back and forth like a ski thing. I got one of those stepper things where you just step on it back and forth, and an ab thing, you know, it's like a chair that you lie in and you do ab crunches and stuff. And I've had all that stuff. I've spent like way too much money on all of that, and I never really used it for anything other than to throw my clothes onto it, and they got wrinkled anyway, so it wasn't even an effective clothes hanger. So I am just like exercise challenged. Even if there was someone of the opposite sex who was standing there in all their glory and beauty saying, I'm going to personally train you. When you move your body, I will move mine. You can watch my ass go back and forth. You can touch me. You can have your way with me after every single exercise class. I will show you a spinning class that will make your head spin, Mr. Van Dam. Even then, I'd probably say, sounds like a lot of work. I don't know. Maybe I'm just lazy. Or maybe I'm just crazy. I don't know which it is. Probably a little bit of all of that. I don't know. Oh, man. Did I get a lot of comments yesterday? Yesterday, I did a whole thing about the Panera Bread. I had never been there before. Blah, 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 blah. And we went through a whole thing for like 20 minutes about it. And, man, I guess a lot of people are listening to that particular one. If you say something really controversial or something not so controversial or something that's just inanely stupid, it's amazing how you find out all of a sudden how many people are listening. And it was like, this is like gigantic response, like I'm the biggest idiot ever born. Ron, you never been to Panera Bread? It's a wonderful place. Why are you saying nasty things about Panera Bread? Because I can, because I still don't understand it. I feel like an outcast. I feel like everybody on the planet has gotten together in a Panera Bread kind of circle, and they've excluded me somehow. They said, you see that guy over there, that tall guy with the beard? Exclude him from your Panera Bread community. It's like a gated community of bread. I know bread's very important. People love bread. Bread is bread, you know, it's basic. You know, when you talk about bread and water, that's what people are served in jails. Although I think they get a hot meal. I'm not sure about it, but I've never been in jail. I don't mind bread and butter. They go well together and stuff. But after a while, you know, bread and butter, can you get something else? But I never got excited about bread. I mean, warm bread, I get excited about warm bread because it's bread that's warm. I mean, it's like a step up from bread. But when someone says bread, I don't like all of a sudden have an orgasm and start spouting all over the place. I mean, I'm just like, okay, bread, yeah, what about it? I mean, it's dough, you put it in the oven, it rises, you eat it, and you go to bed. I mean, what's the deal here? Why are we talking about this? Why are there so many, I guess the Earl of Sandwich, I didn't know him, but I'm sure he was a really nice guy. Probably had a few flaws, but I don't know. But apparently this Earl of Sandwich, and I'm making this up, so I don't know if it's true, but I'm probably correct. this Earl of Sandwich took some bread, which I guess they had plenty of, and he sliced it. It was the greatest idea since sliced bread. I mean, somehow, if someone has an incredible invention or something, it's like the best invention since sliced bread. Was that the best invention ever? Slicing bread? Is that what? Are you raising the bar that high? Ron, I understand this guy cured cancer. Yeah, but it wasn't sliced bread. You know what I'm saying? That was an amazing discovery. Some guy saw bread and decided to make like slices out of it. Wow, sainthood immediately, man. This guy's Pope. By the way, I would never become Pope because you have to wear really strange hats. And I'm not into really strange hats. I have enough problem with making my head look decent. I'm going to like start attracting people staring at the top of my head by wearing gigantic hats like I'm from Texas or something. No, I'm sorry. I can't do the Pope thing. Can't do it. Can't do it. Although the robes look pretty nice, you know. Smoking jackets, I call them. Anyway, so sliced bread, there you have it. I guess the Earl of Sandwich, what he did was he sliced some bread, and he said to himself, all right, I got slices, now like let's put something between it. How about sawdust? How about sawdust? How about, how about like soup? You want to put soup between the bread, which Panera Bread actually does, by the way. Bread bowls. Bread bowl. Marco Polo, bread bowl. So somebody decided to take some luncheon meat and put nitrates in it and oversalt it and put that between bread. Do you know if you go to Great Britain, to England, to the UK? I was there like once for a long time, like 2 weeks, which I guess isn't a long time. To me, 2 weeks is an eternity when you're traveling. I don't know why. I hate to travel. I really do. I'm sorry. I hate to travel. I don't even enjoy picking up my dry cleaning down the street. I mean, it's a lot of traveling for me. In England, they have little sidewalk sandwich shop places, and here's what their sandwiches are, and you'll find this tremendously interesting. They take two slices of white bread and very thin slices as well, and here's their sandwiches. I'm serious, man. This is what they do. They'll take, if you wanted a bologna sandwich, they take one slice of bologna. One slice, ladies and gentlemen. One freaking slice. And it's thin. And they put it between the two pieces of white bread. And basically say, here's your sandwich. It's like the worst cuisine idea ever. I don't know where Gordon Ramsay came from because, like, he didn't straighten up his own country, I'll tell you that. Here's what they put on the sandwich in some places, and this is phenomenal. Two pieces of bread, one slice of lunch meat, bologna in this case, between the two slices, and they'll put a thin layer of butter on the bread. So you've got a little bit of butter on the bread, one slice of bologna, here's your sandwich. And it's thin. It's almost pressed thin, cold, not toasted, nothing like that. And that's your sandwich. And people actually in England, they actually say, yeah, that's a sandwich. I go, no, it's not. You're missing the point of the sandwich. It's to put tons of shit in between the bread. Don't you know that? You got to put tomatoes and lettuce and onions and mounds of lunch meats that will eventually kill you anyway. We're all going to die. Why not die with nitrates and lunch meats? It's a little more pleasant than not. That's the way Americans eat. Pile it high, man. Open your mouth so wide that the hinges come off like a freaking snake and devour that thing. That's what we do as Americans. But in other countries, small amounts of food are quite sufficient for most people. Not here. Not here. Here we want the bargain. We want the bargain. We want as much food as we can get for the smallest price. That's how we eat. We eat by shopping economically for our mouths. I want as much food as possible shoved into my mouth for the lowest cost. And if that's not the formula, then I've been taken. And all of us here in America, we've all been brought up this way, and this is the way that we live. And of course, in other countries, don't get very like Biafra on me, but in other countries, you can ask Angelina Jolie, people don't eat at all. Like when they have put anything in their mouths, it's like heaven has opened up. Here in this country, it's just like the opposite. It's kind of sad in a way. It's just the way that we're programmed. We are programmed in this manner, this crazy manner, in this manner. It's not right. It's wrong. It's so much not right that it's wrong.
Seriously, if this guy was any cooler, he would be pronounced dead. He's Ron Van Dam, and this is The Ron Van Dam Show.
All right, I'm going to turn a little bit more serious right now. We're going to talk about opiate addiction, and the reason that I'm doing that, and not opiate addiction, I'm not talking about people that are addicted to watching the Andy Griffith Show with all of Opie's scenes in them. Not that kind of opiate. These are like drugs, man, that hook people. And many of the actually urban cities and some like states, like actually Massachusetts, are considering it so serious, destroying their youth with these addictions, that they're like declaring another war on them and trying to stop opiate addiction by like getting off of the opiates. And it starts, I guess, as painkillers, and it just like, all right, you need it for pain and then you become dependent on them. So I don't know if it's a recreational situation or people get stuck in having to take these things and then they can't get off of them. So we're talking about that today, and I think it's important. Every once in a while, in my mind, I figure like, as long as I'm doing this Fakakta show every weekday, I might as well make a difference, or at least try to make a difference. It usually doesn't work, but nonetheless, I do it. But I thought this was important enough. I do know a few people that have addictions, addictive personalities, and have ended up in this situation not because they wanted to, but because their personalities have got them into an addictive situation. So let's talk about this. I'm going to go to the magic phone of fun, this is really fun necessarily, and let's see what we can do here. I'm joined by Timothy Lepak, who is a president of nonprofit organization NAABT, and also Dr. Richard Soper. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Ron.
What part of the country are you in today as we speak?
We're actually in New York City.
Nice. Is that where you're usually from?
No, I'm from Hartford.
Okay.
And I'm from Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. Nashville, Tennessee, yeah. Hartford, you got to still say kind of New York, so, all right.
Yeah.
All right, fine. All right, we're talking about opiate addiction and why it's easier to become addicted than receive treatment, which I assume is the case. What is an opiate for those that may not be familiar?
Ron, opiate is actually a naturally occurring substance. It derives from the poppy flower, the fruit of the poppy flower. It's been around for thousands of years. It's been very effective in the treatment of pain for many years.
Mm-hmm. Was that what you feel the primary introduction into humanity was for that purpose?
I think it's more complex than just for pain. It's been introduced to humanity for actually as well mind-altering. Mm-hmm. Some individuals have responses to it other than just alleviation of pain.
Okay, but if you're on pain medication for a long time, you can become addicted to that in itself for that reason, and then that addiction forms, is that correct?
Yeah, and you know, in fact, according to the CDC, 46 people a day die from prescription opioid overdose alone. Oh. And you add in heroin overdose, and that's over 100. So it's a serious problem. you know, doctors have effective treatments for it, but patients are having trouble actually getting those treatments. We did a survey this summer, and we found that 40% of the people that actually sought treatment spent weeks or months to find a doctor. And once they did, many of them were placed on waiting lists.
Wow. Okay. So so the problem is getting off of it once you become dependent on it and your body has accepted it. Is that pretty much what we're talking about?
The problem is, I would preface that, Ron, with saying that's part of the problem.
Right.
Some of the problem as well is that we still consider it in many segments of our society a character defect or a short issue such as a scratch on the hand, and it really is closer to being treated for diabetes, where it is a chronic medical disorder. And you're from one of the fortunate communities where both your mayor as well in Boston as well as the governor of Massachusetts are addressing this with even positions within their cabinets.
Yeah,
and I think the state of Vermont addressed last year. The governor even addressed this.
Okay, how do you know if someone in your family is suffering from this? I assume that they would try to hide it. Let me ask you first: are they aware that they are addicted, or is this something that they're not even really familiar with and they just do it?
Generally, it's a short time before they realize they're addicted.
Okay.
And they have probably tried to stop. They might be in some denial, thinking that if they tried a little harder, they'd be able to stop. But they're quite certain that they have an issue. And instead of, certainly parents need to be aware of it and see if they're changing their friends, their habits, they're running out of money, their mood changes. But beyond playing detective and like that, what parents should do is really learn as much as they can about opiate addiction and the treatments ahead of time. You know, if they suspect that their son or daughter might be addicted, just to learn about it so that when that patient is ready to get help, then they have the answers for them right then, and they don't have to start the learning process at that time.
All right. Are opiates the only method of extreme pain relief?
Not at all. There's other more comprehensive ways to treat pain. In fact, 90% of the opiates in the world that are used are in the United States. There's other forms of therapy throughout the world that are used. And in fact, in this country, there are, whether it's allopathic or it's non-medication, acupuncture, et cetera, there's many other forms to treat pain.
Okay. You know, we tend in this country, and I guess all over the world, to call people drug addicts, you know, in a grouping, and figure that they are all criminals and they all are nasty people. I don't know, maybe the dependency turns you into that for survival, but is that what you find? Do you find that there's like a bad connotation when it's just people who are stuck?
There's definitely a bad connotation. It's a stigma, and the that stigma causes a tremendous amount of damage. You know, one survey showed that healthcare workers, these are people who should know better, but healthcare workers were more likely to treat patients punitively if they were called abusers rather than patients. So one of the things we do at the NAABT is we try to never use any of the derogatory terms and just try to use the medical terms, because it's a medical condition. And in doing so, you know, I think that it actually helps insurance companies be more likely to cover a patient suffering from opiate addiction than to soothe the cravings of a dope sick addict, as the Boston Globe once put it.
I mean, obviously the ramifications are extreme, but would you compare it to smoking or alcoholism?
Well, both smoking and alcoholism are involving substances that you can become dependent on.
Mm-hmm.
There are some nuanced complexities to opiate addiction involved both with financial as well as criminal behaviors and other complexities. Nicotine and alcohol are both legal in our society, and you can obtain those once you're past the age of 21.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily the case with opiates. You have to at least encounter them from a prescription initially within our country.
Okay. Do opiates escalate to anything else?
Absolutely. Many times individuals that become dependent on opiates, when they cannot find their supply for opiates, will, in desperate acts seek other substances or use other substances. As well, individuals many times will become abstinent off of a substance from short-term treatment, and ultimately they then find themselves abusing or becoming dependent on other substances or other behaviors, whether it's gambling or other medications.
So there's a lot of this. There's a lot of psychology to addictive personalities, where that personality type would tend to be more susceptible to anything of this sort.
That's a good question, Ron. And I, again, rather than us, I think, trying to categorize it as to particular types of personalities, it's not a personality disorder per se. Across the board, various demographics, age, income, race, gender, et cetera, have exposure to and can become dependent on opiates.
Okay. All right. So how do we get more information about this? And I guess the part two of my question that I originally had that I never got to was, how do you know if somebody, a friend or someone is involved here? Obviously, their friends change, their circles change. Can you tell physically from anything that's happening that someone has got this problem?
Yeah, you can tell from the pupils of their eyes. If you look in dim light, and if they have very, very small pupils, that's one indication that they're taking some sort of opiate.
Okay.
But mostly it's the other signs. It's running out of money. It's the the changing of the mood, changing of the friends.
Yep.
And the thing to do if you suspect somebody is to learn as much as you can about the disease so that when it comes time to help that person, you're able to take that next step right away. You know what to do. And not spend time trying to learn about it at that point, because there's a lot to it, and a lot of the information that is out there is really not correct. So, you know, pursuing an evidence-based approach, talking to some healthcare providers, is probably a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I think, Ron, what we've seen as depictions, both on the media as well as from cinema, are not necessarily accurate. I'd say the vast majority of patients that I see that become opioid dependent, they're not the individual that's slumped over on the couch and is semi-conscious. Many times patients that I see take opiates because they have the opposite effect. They actually will tell me that they are energized by opiates, that it allows them to get through their long day or their routine. So, in fact, it's not necessarily the individual that we think we're going to see them sleeping all the time.
I got you. Okay. How do we get more information?
Well, best thing to do, I would go to treatmentmatch.org. We have information that people can download right there. If someone needs to get a doctor today, they can sign up on the free matching system. It's confidential, and it connects them with a doctor in their area.
Okay.
As well, a doctor in your area, if you have a physician or a nurse or someone that's in healthcare, ask someone in healthcare if you trust, even a pharmacist at the pharmacy or drugstore you go to. Family can help. If at all possible, family can be tremendous help.
Okay. And, of course, we can contact NAABT, the organization itself, and they can give you information as well. Well, public awareness is usually half the battle, so thank you for doing that. And a pleasure to speaking to the both of you.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Your eyes are cold and avoiding my gaze. In this silent room of yours, minutes turn into days. Oh, when did one become not enough? Was it so bad you'd risk all love? You've shed light on my darkest dream. In this nightmare, deep is the water. excuses. Now I know my instincts were right. When the time is here for all the truth to come, I'll still you try and hold back all you lied about.
Well, that'll do it for me today. Thank you for stopping by, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another program. Until then, I do wish you peace. This is Carmen and Camille, a group that's been on our show and did the soundtrack for a motion picture that I directed and co-produced. So, with Mark Schepeda, ladies and gentlemen. What a wonderful man. So, Carmen and Camille, thank you so much. And to all of you, thank you so much. We'll be back again tomorrow. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Thanks. Bye. Bye.